I'd like to greet you on Christ's name this morning, and welcome visitors. Glad you're here with us. So I feel like I might have a controversial message this morning, but I don't think it needs to be open. I've been thinking about it a little while, and I thought, well, maybe this is a Sunday to preach it, and God didn't lay anything else on my heart, so here we are. I'd like to talk, I titled it Christians and Money. Is there anything more controversial than that subject in the circles we run around in? I mean, maybe whether you're a pre or an om, or whether the Jews are still God's chosen people might be the bigger of the arguments, but money is something that it seems like a lot of people, I don't know if they feel uncomfortable with it or if they feel, I don't know, at us through the culture and through people, and they're not all wrong. But I'd like to talk about it this morning. Should Christians have money or not? Should they be a financially broke people so they're more dependent on God? Some people feel that way. Some people say Christians shouldn't have money because it causes more problems than it solves. Some people say Christians should have all the money because if the other kingdom has the money, all we have is a well-financed kingdom of darkness. We hear stories about the rich young ruler, and we hear about the fact that God sees every sparrow that falls. And he clothes the flowers of the field, and he cares for us much more than any of these. So why should we even have the conversation about money? We read stories and parables and can come to the conclusion we should own nothing or next to nothing. So let's think about this a little bit this morning. What is rich to you? Did you ever stop and think about that? What's rich? And what is too many riches for a Christian? Where is the line that's when it's crossed, we're too rich and we are barred from heaven? Let me ask you something else. Who gets to define rich? Did you ever think about that? Who gets to decide what rich is? We might lean back and we go, I know what rich is. It's a 300-acre ranch and a 5-bedroom, 4-bath house and 2 new cars in the garage. That's rich. Oh, and we'll put $1 million in the bank just for good measure. That's rich. We lean back and we say, we've settled it. But is that rich? What's rich to you? By whose standard? Who gets to decide what metric we use? If that's what the Jeff Bezos and the Warren Buffetts of the world went by, they'd be in panic mode and working overtime because to them, that's pauper status. Who says they can't define what rich is? What about the African in the mud hut? Who says he can't define what rich is? Some people, what gives him less right to define it than anybody else? To him, it's a week's supply of food, and if he's really lucky and blessed, he has a house with one electrical outlet in it. To him, that's wealthy. Who says he don't get to decide? And a car would be a massive luxury to him. Just something to think about. I want you to think about that. There was a time in my life when I wouldn't have said that rich people didn't have a shot at getting into heaven, but I had some serious questions about it, and I'm still not sure I have all the answers. So here's the thing. Y'all listen carefully to what I'm going to tell you this morning, and after the service, if I'm wrong, y'all tell me, because I'm not always sure I'm right on all this stuff. But I want us to think about this a little bit. The average yearly income across the globe is $9,733. That's the average yearly income. If you have $2,220 in the bank, you are richer than 50% of the world's population. If you earn $34,000 a year, you are in the richest 1% of the world. So are you rich this morning? I'm going to guess and say nearly everybody in here, if you didn't make the 1% richest category, you're probably in the top 5 or 10%. So now what are we going to do? You see, we tend to define wealthy and rich by what we see right around us. And while we don't always feel rich, I want you to think about this with an open mind. We live in a unique time in history, that we live in a country that has wealth like it's never been seen before in the history of the world. And if you live in this country and you go to work like the Bible teaches, you save like the Bible teaches, and you're diligent, it seems you about can't help but build some form of wealth, barring some awful health crisis or calamity. And there is people that live here and they face those things and they're real. But it seems like if you live here and you do your due diligence, you about can't help but build some level of wealth. And then what do we do about through the eye of a needle and some of the other scriptures I mentioned? It seems if we don't do our due diligence and are lazy and make poor financial decisions, if we read some scriptures, it seems like we're in trouble with God over it. And it seems if we make wise choices financially and go to work every day and save money, we're still in trouble with God. Is that the way it is or not? So what do we do? What do we do? And I read the Sunday school lesson after I studied this message, and I seen we were talking about some of this stuff I was talking about was in the lesson. We didn't necessarily talk about it in Sunday school class. It would have been kind of interesting too, but we didn't. But I think the answer to what these questions are that I've been asking lies in Matthew 25:14. We'll read that. We'll start in verse 14 and read down through 30. Matthew 25:14-30. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling into a far country who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, and another 2, and another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them another 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2 also gained the other 2. And when he that had received, but he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, thou hast that is thine. The Lord answered and said unto him, thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knowest that I reap where I sowed not and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received my own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Stewardship. I think that's our answer. Stewardship. We hear about stewardship and we try to be good stewards of what God's given us. And a lot of y'all do a very good job. I want to commend y'all for that. But it's something I know I can grow in very much. Going back to verse 14, we had a very wealthy man here, and he had some servants, and he was leaving for quite a while. And notice he delivered to them his goods. It wasn't their goods. It was his goods. Never once in this story did they own it. They were only managers of it. He had 8 talents to distribute and 3 servants. And notice he wasn't really, he didn't distribute them equally. He didn't give each of them 2.66 talents. Was he fair? I think there's a lesson in there that fair is not always equal. And it's a good thing to remember in life. He knew which ones could handle what. I was trying to figure out what all a talent is worth, and there's some variation from what I found. So I don't know if this is exactly accurate, but the thought I found was that a talent is worth about 20 years worth of labor. So this was not tiny little bits of money this man was giving out to manage. It was huge sums of money to his servants. He was trusting them. Going down to verse 19. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh, and he reckoneth with them. There was a day of reckoning that was coming. And he lined up these boys to see how they had done with what he had given them to manage. And the first two did beautifully. Can you imagine the wonderful words of this Lord to be on the receiving end of these words? It was a beautiful thing to hear. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. They did what he asked them to, and they did it well, and he was very happy with them. Notice one brought, they both doubled their portion. One brought back 10 when he was given 5, one brought back 4 when he was given 2. But the Lord was equally proud of each one of what they had done. With what the resources he gave them, they both received the same reward. Both did their due diligence in managing their Lord's money, and both received praise and a reward. And then comes this third servant. And I don't know what he was thinking when he walked up there. If it would have been me, I would have been shaking in my shoes, I think. Notice he came up to him, to this Lord, almost on the defensive side, almost like he was a victim of something. And verse 24 and 25, he said, "Thou art a hard man." What a thing to say to your Lord right when you walk up to him. You're a hard man. That's one of the first things he's going to say. You reap where you didn't sow, and you gathered where you didn't plant. What a good way to get started, right? And then you can almost see him throwing a rusty bar of gold down at his Lord's feet, and it clatters on the ground, and he says, "There, you can have it back now. It's what you gave me, and you can have it back." And he was hoping against hope that his master would let it go at that. He was hoping he wouldn't be judged for just burying his talent in the ground. But that isn't what happened. He received a royal tongue lashing. He was called a wicked and a lazy servant, and he was given some fast instruction on what he could have done at the very least. If you read a similar story in Luke, it actually says something about putting it in the bank. You could have at least put it in the bank. But you buried it. You buried it. And he said, "Take the talent away from him and give it to the one that has 10 talents. Notice he wasn't equal again in his distribution of his talents. He gave it to the one that had 10. Why didn't he give it to the one that brought back 5 or 4? Just some questions I have. And then he cast the servant into outer darkness. And that, my friends, is what we are in danger of if we squander the stewardship responsibility that we have of the Lord, that the Lord has blessed us with. And it's a scary responsibility to be a steward. Whether we think we have much or little, I think we've already established we all have much. So what are we doing with it? What are we doing with it? How can we be better stewards of God's resources? I might get kind of practical this morning. Some of this stuff, when we had that marriage enrichment seminar that Joe put together, and I talked some on the finance, some of this material comes out of that talk, so you might have heard some of it before. But last year I was at Anabaptist financial meeting last fall up in Missouri, and their plea was to go home and share with your congregations about money management. It's a sore point, and it's becoming more and more of a sore point in the Anabaptist circles too. People are hungry to learn and they want teaching, and I don't feel like I'm that teacher that y'all need, but I'm going to share with y'all some of my own life experiences, and maybe we can learn together. When I look back at my life, I would like to tell you that money is a non-issue. It doesn't matter if you have it. You're just as happy of a person without it as you are with it. And that's true. You can be as happy of a person without it as you are with it. But I'm just a little bit like Zig Ziglar. He said, I've had money and I've not had money, and I figured out life is a lot easier with it than without it. And that's true. Money has a way of greasing life's wheels just a little bit. And money is a sore point, can be a sore point in marriages between couples. It just can, because everybody has different opinions. And even if you think a lot like your spouse, this is still a spot that can be a sore subject. There's a reason they say that the divorce attorney's office is right beside the bankruptcy attorney's office. A lot of times, it's said, when couples get divorced, it's because of money. And I don't think it has to be that way. I don't think it does. So I'm going to share some of my personal opinions, and they're personal opinions, and y'all can take them as such. I had to wonder when I was studying for this message, if one of the things we're lacking is lack of accountability. I don't know why it is, but it seems money is something me, especially me, can get all secretive about in a real big hurry. And why is that? Why is that? Is it because I'm ashamed of how I handled it wrongly and I don't want anybody to know? Or is it maybe because somebody was very successful and they don't want people to know? Why is it that when it comes to money, we tend to be secretive? I don't know. I just had to wonder if maybe it's one of the areas we could improve in. I'm not saying that at every monthly men's meeting we all bring our bank statements and our spreadsheets and we sit around and talk about it. That could be real cause for disaster, but why can't there be an openness about it? There's a road in the middle, and there's a chance I might be on the road that's leading me to a lot of debt and destruction in my family life, and there's a chance I might be a wealthy man and trying to put my faith in my wealth, if you want, and there's times that you brethren can speak into my life and tell me if I'm on one side of the road or the other. And if we are all secretive about it and we can't ever talk about it, there's nobody to tell you where the line is or to help you find that line. A spirit of openness. And I'm not saying to be nosy about it. I've had people come ask me, I'm one of these people that I don't mind if somebody knows how much I paid for a car or for my house. It just doesn't matter to me. But some people are very closed about that, and for whatever reason. And I'm not saying to go talk to these people in a nosy kind of a way. I've already had people come talk to me about things, and they did it because they were nosy. They just wanted information. And don't go do it because of that. If you're going to go talk to somebody, I think you need to do it out of a spirit of wanting to help them and make sure they're okay. Does that make sense? don't step out of your place just to get information. But at the same time, there comes a time when I need to be open in my life to y'all's input. Especially if it's a church member, if it's a brother in the church that you go to church with and you know they have a concern for you and your life, especially in finances, whatever, be open to it. It's not something to be. I think you owe them an honest answer, is what I'm trying to say. I think it's cause for suspicion if somebody is way too closed about it, that they never can talk about it to anyone. Maybe I'm out of my place saying that, but that's kind of how I feel. All right, I have several points here in handling money, and there's a lot of others, but we're going to talk about these that I have here this morning. Debt. So many people think debt is the answer to their financial problems. And we have a horrible example of this with our government. It just drives me nuts how they spend money. They just, passed another $1.9 trillion, whatever. And I can't help, I just want to go up there and say, y'all boys should go hang out with somebody that knows how to handle money for a while, because it seems like they just recklessly spend money. And I do think someday there's going to be a day of reckoning on that. I don't know when, I don't know where, and I don't know how, and I'm not going to prophesy it, but you can't just borrow money into oblivion the way they do and not catch up with you someday. But sometimes that attitude drifts into our circles. It does. Did you ever stop and think about it, how nice a debt seller has it? A man that sells debt at the bank, they actually view debt as a product, the same way you would pull a product off the shelf, and they get paid by how much money they loan out during a year. Now, imagine you're selling debt, and you know what people do? They come line up at your door begging for your money. What a breeze of a salesman's job. You don't even have to do that much advertising. They just come to you. They're begging for your product. What a wonderful salesman job, right? And you, as the debt seller, are making the decision whether they qualify for your product or not. How about that? They actually turn people away because they don't qualify for their product. What a job. This is just my opinion. All debt is bad, but some not so bad as others. I was blessed to grow up in a household where debt was avoided like the plague. And it was a good teaching. It was a good, solid teaching. It might be one of the reasons why I'm so debt-averse today. I know I end up on the conservative side of not borrowing money from most people. I know that. And so I'm not trying to push that on anybody here. But we do well to stop and think about it before you just randomly take out debt. And it's so easy to do. It's so easy to go to the bank and get a loan for anything we want. We can. It seems like the bank can supply all our wishes, right? But it's not the way it is. The borrower is slave to the lender. That's just the way it is. And full disclosure, I'm in debt this morning. I have a mortgage on my house. Hopefully it'll be gone in several years, but I still have it. So it's the one area that I will borrow money on, and I don't even like to do it then. But just to be open with y'all, that's where I'm at today. Be very aware of consumer debt. Gary Miller at the Anabaptist Financial Meeting, I got to meet the man. He's quite the interesting character. But he used the analogy of an ice cream cone being a consumer product and something that you probably wouldn't want to invest much of your money in. Can you imagine how foolish it would look if I took 90% of my savings and invested it in ice cream cones? I would look pretty foolish in about 5 minutes on a hot summer day. And that's something to think about. When buying consumer products, it's not wise to borrow money on a consumer product. It's not bad to own consumer products. I buy consumer products all the time. We all do. It's part of the world we live in. but it's foolish to borrow money on it. Just be aware of that. It's okay to have consumer products, but be wise with it. Yesterday, I'm still learning the stewardship thing. I really am. I'm not sure I'm always the wise steward, and I don't think I probably was yesterday. So we have a bunch of flies in our house for some aggravating reason. And I went to find the fly swatter, and I have a 3-year-old in the house, and I could not find that fly swatter anywhere. And for 2 days, it seemed these flies were building up, and it just drove me nuts. I couldn't kill them. And yesterday I was in town, and I bought 6 fly swatters. Now, was that wise stewardship? At the time, I was frustrated, and I decided I'm going to make sure I have plenty of fly swatters, and I bought 6 of them. Now, my wife kind of gave me a hard time. She's like, really, babe, 6 fly swatters? She didn't care, and then I came home, and I was typing out this message, and I was like, was that wise stewardship? Maybe I should take some of these fly swatters back. I don't know. But sometimes we do things like that, and we do it out of frustration, and we do it out of just saying that to be wise. Know yourself that away. If you have problems with spending problems, stay away from credit cards. When I was newly married, early in our marriage, we didn't use a credit card. And suddenly I decided, I got all sophisticated and decided I'm spending this money anyway. I might as well put it on credit cards and pay one bill a month. And it didn't take long for my personality to come out in that. And what happened was I paid my bill every month. I did. But there came times when I would bring my whole paycheck home and nearly the whole check went to pay the silly credit card bill. And what happened was is that I'd be standing in a store and it's so easy to put money on it. So easy to put money on it. And you don't think about it. And so several years ago, I got rid of my credit card, and you know what? It's been a blessing ever since. Credit cards aren't evil. I'm not saying that this morning. But if you have a spending problem like I did back then, apparently, because I was spending all my money on it, it's probably a good idea to get rid of it. Just saying that. Be careful when buying cars. I'm a boy, so anything with a motor is awesome, right? And it's an area that I could get so carried away with because there's so many awesome cars out there. It's awesome. But when I look in my past, and by the way, nice cars aren't bad. I really don't think driving a decent car is a bad thing. But it's one of the areas where I lost a lot of money in looking back across my life. A lot of money in a short time. I remember as a young man, I was probably 19 years old or something, there was a certain car in my mind that I wanted bad, and I didn't have the money to buy it. I just flat didn't. And so I came up with this wild idea that I needed to build my credit score, and I needed to go borrow money so I could build my credit score. And I went and told my mother this, and she pretty much told me under no uncertain circumstances that I am not going to do that. And at the time, it was a sore thing to accept because I really wanted that car. And looking back, I'm like, thanks, Mom, because that would have been the dumbest thing I could have done. A 19-year-old boy did not need that car. So if you're like me and you have car wants and car needs, be careful. Be aware of yourself. It's easy to justify. It really is. We men have ways of, and maybe women too, I don't know, but we men especially have ways of justifying what we want and laying out in our mind how it's going to all go down. And one thing I've learned is one thing sure in life is you never know what's going to happen. You don't. I could, I could go to the car lot tomorrow and buy a brand new car and make payments on it, and probably I'd be all right. But if I would have done that last year, this time right at the beginning of the whole coronavirus thing, and there was a time last year, the beginning of last year, I wasn't sure where my job was going to go. Sales were down, and I thought, man, maybe they're going to send me home. And it turned out to be a great year. That's not what happened. But if I'd have done that last year, say I'd have went and bought a new car in February on payments, I would have been panicked, thinking I might lose my job. You never know what's going to happen in life. All right, point number two. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Budget. It sounds restricting. It sounds no fun. And when I started, I was a flop at it. But there's something about laying your goals down on paper with your wife, with your spouse, and deciding what you're going to do with your money before the month begins or when you get your paycheck. There's something about it that has a way of showing you your spending habits and opening up your eyes to some of your personality and your what you spend money on. Sometimes it's scary what shows up on there. And I'm not saying it doesn't have to be a big complicated thing. Just spend your money with a plan. You're going to spend your money anyway. You might as well spend it with a plan. My wife is actually a whole lot better at doing a budget than I am. She knows math and numbers better than I do. I can ask her things like, what's 2 plus 2? And she says 4. And I'm like, wow, you're the one that's going to do the budget. You know what I mean? No, it's not quite that bad. But she is better at laying out numbers than I am. And so a lot of times she'll write out the budget and I'll look over it. And if I want to change something, we change it. And a lot of the times it's become a rhythm of our life. We kind of know what categories things fall into. So work together if you're married. It makes you as a couple communicate, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Another area I messed up in doing the budget years ago, I changed it now. But I used to always make sure I had my spending cash. I was pretty good at making sure I had my monthly allowance in my wallet. And I totally forgot about my wife. Don't do that. Don't do that, guys. Your wife has as much right to your paycheck as what you do. She's at home taking care of your children, and she has just as much right to your money as you do. And so just for whatever it's worth, make sure your wife has a little spending cash. I think it's good for my wife to have some money it's her own, and it doesn't have to be a lot every month. You'll be surprised how much $40 or $50 will go, or $100, whatever you decide. You'll be surprised at how good it is for your wife to be able to spend that money, and you know you're not going to ask about it. It's her spending cash. Let her do with it what she wants to. And I personally like to give it to her in cash. I mean, back in the early days, my wife knew she could go spend money on the debit card or whatever. But there's something about cash that it's a done deal. I don't know. Just something to think about. Point number three, I mentioned this before here, but I think it's important enough, I'm going to mention it again. Do a will/end-of-life plan. I know we don't like to think about our death and our mortality, but I'll just tell y'all, the world's full of graveyards, and one of these days we're going to all be in one unless the Lord returns. And so make sure you're spiritually ready, first of all. And then right after that, go get prepared for it financially. Nobody wants to deal with trying to figure out what your wishes were and what to do with the things God gave you to be a steward over. Nobody wants to sit down and try to figure out how to disperse this after you're gone. So figure out now. Figure out now. Everybody over the age of 18 needs to do a will. I don't care if it's an online service or whether you go to the lawyer's office or if you set up a trust. I don't care how you do it. Just do it. Make your wishes known. and make it known to those who it affects. It's not a big secret what's in your will. Go ahead and dictate what's going to happen to your stuff while you're still alive. It's not something that's going to benefit you. You're gone. I'm gone. But it sure enough affects your family and those trying to take care of things after you're gone. So go do it. It's my encouragement to you. I went so far as to, we went and did a will, and then I went so far as to lay out on another sheet of paper a whole bunch of other instructions to the executor and then to the one that's getting the children. Here's how I want the house sold. Here's the little bit I have in some accounts. Put it all together, and the money, here's how I want it invested, and the money that comes off the top. Here's how much I want to go to the ones that have the children to help pay for clothing and feeding them. And you can just make it plain. Make it known to what you want to happen to your things. It's a way of saying, I love your family by doing a will. So just, they're not that expensive. So I'm begging y'all, if y'all don't have one, go get one. All right, point number four, tithing and giving. I used to mess this up pretty bad. I did. I used to pay all my bills and make sure I had all my bills done for the month. And then if there's something over, I'd take it to the Lord's house and put it in the offering. And you know how many times there wasn't enough left to put in the Lord's offering? It's funny how that works, and it's not the right way to go about it. And the funny thing is, when I started giving 10% right off the top, somehow I always managed to make it through on the other 90. Just fine. Just fine. I don't believe tithing is a salvation issue, but I do believe if a Christian isn't doing it, it points to some other areas in their life that they might need work on. Malachi 3:8. Will a man rob God? Ye have robbed me, but ye say, wherewith have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings, you are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes and offering into the storehouse, that there might be meat in my house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open to you the windows of heaven and pour out a blessing, that there will not be enough room to receive it. God's a giver, and we're supposed to be like God. God's saying this is the best way you can live your life, is if you are givers like me. Every one of us is blessed, and we are blessed that we might be a blessing. And God is telling us that when we flex our giving muscle, it's a good experience for us. Don't give because we want God to bless us. That's not the point. God really doesn't need my 10% financially. He's got it all anyway. But God's telling us that when we give and we flex that giving muscle, it's for our own good. It does you good to be a giver. Tithing, giving. I think giving might fall into a little bit of a different category. Tithing is kind of what I more or less feel like I have to do, even though, if that makes sense, it feels like it's something that I have to do. But I think giving comes above the tithe, personally. That's the way I feel about it. Sometimes in our budget, we'll put a line in an item in there called generous giving, and that's not money we carry to the church necessarily and put in the offering plate, but it's money that you can be generous with. Take somebody out to lunch or leave an extra nice tip it's money to do generous giving with. Let me tell you something else about money. I scarfed this out of the offering basket because I forgot to bring some, but I'm going to put it back in just so you know. But all money does, well, let's start here. If you hold your money like this, you know what happens? You might keep what's in it. Nobody can get it and pull it out. But you also can't get any more. You know what happens if you hold money in an open hand? Like this, even a dog can understand an open hand. It can come, it comes and it goes. And I just want to encourage y'all, encourage me, hold your money with an open hand. Don't hold it in a clenched fist like it's mine. It's mine, it's mine. It's not yours, it's God's. We're just managers. And something else about money that's kind of weird. All money does is magnify who you are. Did you know that? If you are a jerk and you come into a bunch of money, and I've met people like that already. They were a jerk since whenever, and they come into a bunch of money, and you know what it turns them into? A real jerk, and nobody wants to hang out with them. They're not fun people to be around. You know what happens if you give a kind, generous person that has been like that their whole life gets a bunch of money? You know what it does to them most of the time? If they view it as stewardship from God, they could become some of the most kind, helpful, caring people you ever met. And they're some of the funnest people to be around. Yeah, money has a way of exposing who you really are and who I really am. It's just the way it is. Just a few other thoughts here that I'm not sure how I feel about all this, but how much time and energy should a Christian really put into protecting what they've earned their whole life? That's a real question I have. Maybe it should be something for the small groups. I don't know. But I do think it should, I think we do need to do our due diligence in protecting what God has given us. Say, I don't know, setting up your business as an LLC or something. I don't know a whole lot about that world, but I think that's a good way to do our due diligence. But it raises a few questions in my mind when I see some people that work their whole life and they got a lot of money and then they spend a whole lot of time and effort into making sure they have every little insurance in the book and everything possible to make them covered no matter what happens. Make sure every dollar is protected no matter what. And maybe that is some of what stewardship is about, but something doesn't ring quite true with me on that. What happened to the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away? What happened to that? I don't know. That's a question I have for y'all, and I don't have an answer. And in closing, we must admit wealth has its downfalls. Who here doesn't know somebody that fell for the lie that money is going to make them happy, and they spend their whole life pursuing it, and they never end up being happy? We all know people like that. It's a vain pursuit, and don't try to pursue it. It can cause you to be heady, and it's not good for you. It's not good to pursue it because you think it's going to make you happy. Even in church life, money is power. It is. That's just part of the way it is. And we do well to recognize that. Even in church life, a wealthy brother can sometimes swing a vote one way or the other by putting some of their money behind what they're saying. Does that make sense? I've seen that happen already. They can offer to, yeah, just think about that. Titus, read you several verses here in 1 Timothy. Charge them that are rich in this world that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. That they do good, that they be rich in good works and ready to distribute, willing to communicate, laying up in store for themselves a good foundation against time to come, that they may lay hold on eternal life. One thing I've learned about I'm learning about the Bible is that the Bible doesn't tell you to do things that are impossible. In other words, it doesn't teach you how to train pigs how to fly, because pigs can't fly. They don't have wings. So when we read verses, we have to understand that if they're saying it, there's a possibility that could happen. And he's saying here not to be high-minded. So obviously that's a possibility if you're a man of means, to become high-minded. Obviously it's a possibility we can trust in uncertain riches. And remember the thing, the little bit I mentioned about being open and communicating about finances? He says in this word, in verse 19, 1 Timothy 6:19, in 18, that they be willing to communicate. Something to think about. I've heard it said that in the New Testament, outside of speaking about God's love for us, Jesus talked more about finance and stewardship than anything else. And I didn't research that. I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise me. We do well to manage what God has given us to further God's kingdom. And in closing, I just want to bless y'all as a church. I was talking to Jason the other day, or here a while back, and this church, for whatever reason, does seem to have a bunch of financially responsible people. I've been in the churches where it seemed the competition was on to have the nicest, newest truck and the nicest, biggest wheels on it, and I don't see that here. And I want to bless y'all for that. That's a sign of maturity in dealing with this subject of stewardship. And so this message was not preached at y'all necessarily as much as it was me, because I see some of these things popping up over and over in my life, and I think maybe that's why God wanted me to talk about it. It was more to preach to myself about some of this stuff than anybody else. With these thoughts, why don't we kneel for prayer?